Let's turn to Revelation chapter 8. Revelation chapter 8, we'll do the last verse that I left intentionally, and then start on chapter 9. Again, remember, we're looking at the judgments of Revelation. If you weren't here last hour, we divide the judgments into three different sections: the seals, trumpets, and bowls. And the first four seals are the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The last three trumpets are the woe judgments, and that's what we'll be looking at or starting to look at this hour. We'll get through the first woe judgment. And then the seventh trumpet is the bowls judgment, and that takes us right down to the second coming of Jesus Christ. So that's how we're moving through the judgments of Revelation, or the tribulation period, as you've probably heard it called. Last hour we looked at the first four trumpets. Remember, the first trumpet was hail and fire mixed with blood. And we went noticed that this could be a providential judgment or this could be a creative judgment. Either way, and I prefer the creative myself, either way, if you take them literally or if you don't, the thrust of the judgment is fire and burning. And vegetation will be scorched. And that's the effect, scorched vegetation. So the fact of this event is certain. It's absolutely certain that there will be scorched vegetation during the tribulation period under the trumpet judgments. Now, whether that comes about as a result of providential action by God or direct intervention into human affairs by God is a matter of conjecture. We can't prove it either way, and you can take it either way if you like. I prefer that God is intervening now, because people know already that God is intervening in human affairs. They've known that since chapter 6. A creative miracle. The second trumpet was something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. So we have here, we know it wasn't a mountain, it's a simile. It was like a great mountain. So sea, probably a reference to the Mediterranean. It usually is when it's in the Bible. And there's no reason not to take this literally. The effect is that one-third of the sea creatures and one-third of the ships in the Mediterranean will be destroyed. The third trumpet, a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. Remember, the word star, or the Greek word astēr, means a luminous body other than the sun, visible in the sky. So it doesn't mean a star as we think of a star, because when we think of a star, we think of something like the sun. And it has, you know, it's gigantic and it's full of hot gases and all of that sort of thing. And it's not like planets, it's not like meteors, it's not like asteroids. It's a special thing in our language. But in the Greek, it just meant something visible in the sky other than the sun. So it could apply then to comets, it could apply to meteors, it could apply to asteroids, anything you can see in the sky, any luminous object. And the effect of that judgment was chemical contamination of drinking water. And that, we hear more about that all the time, is that terrorists are gearing up to contaminate drinking water. You hear it all the time. So this one could very easily be a providential miracle that God would send. And the fourth trumpet, and we notice the trumpets are getting more severe. The fourth is monumental changes in the solar system. In verse 12 it says, a fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars were struck, so that a third of them would be darkened, and the day would not shine for a third of it, and the night in the same way. Now, for that to happen, there would be have to be a reordering of the solar system as it exists now. We noted last hour that God gave creation to prove His existence and to demonstrate His attributes. The heavens demonstrate the power of God. The heavens demonstrate the faithfulness of God because the sun rises every morning. You don't have to be a prophet and sit on a hill and say, I prophesy that the sun will rise tomorrow morning. You don't have to do that. It does, day after day after day, because God is a faithful God. And that proves it. So there's a message in creation. And if man does not accept that message of creation as given, God will reorder creation to give him even more proof. And that's what he does during this tribulation period. As he judges nations, he gives man proof of his power. So the message of these monumental changes in the solar system is God's power. And the responsibility is to believe God and to honor Him for that. Now that brings us to the woe judgments. And the first one is in the proclamation is in verse 13 of chapter 8, where it says, Then I looked, and I heard an eagle flying in mid-heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. So the first four trumpets and the last three are separated, and the last three are called the woe judgments. 8:13 is an introduction to this section. And first we have a proclamation of the woe judgments, which I just read. Now, you have to ask the question, why is there a break here? Why did he put a break in the middle of the trumpet judgments? Well, there's two reasons. One, to emphasize the severity of the judgments that are coming up. And you can see that easily. Woe, woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth. And he's emphasizing severity. And second, to give an opportunity for repentance. Nobody can say they weren't warned, because the warning is given here. So no one can say they didn't hear the message and therefore they weren't saved. Now the word woe is often used in Scripture to introduce a great calamity about to come from God. And that's exactly what we have here. The distinguishing feature of these judgments is going to be judgment from the unseen world. Now, the first four trumpets have been limited to the material world. The land, the sea, the heavens, that's all material world. But now there's going to be something else happen. And that is the door between earth and the prison of evil demons is going to be opened. Look at 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. It says, For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment. So these evil angels are cast into hell and committed to pits of darkness. Now look at Jude verse 6. Verse 6 of Jude says, that the angels who did not keep their own domain but abandoned their proper abode, he has kept in eternal bonds under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Now these guys are going to get let loose, in other words. And that's what we have in the first woe, judgment. So the door between earth and the place where God has Satan's evilest, I guess you could say, angels locked up is about to be opened. So let's look at the execution of those judgments. The fifth trumpet, or the first woe judgment, is in chapter 9, verse 1 through 11. So let's read that over. Starting in chapter 9 and verse 1, it says, "Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven, which had fallen to the earth, and the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. He opened the bottomless pit, and smoke went up out of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke came locusts upon the earth, and power was given to them, as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were told not to hurt the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only the men who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not permitted to kill anyone, but to torment for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings a man. And in those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will long to die, and death flees from them. The appearance of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads appeared to be crowns like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like the hair of a woman, and their teeth were like the teeth of lions. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots, of many horses rushing into battle. They have tails like scorpions and stings, and in their tails is the power to hurt men for 5 months. They have a king over them, the angel of the abyss. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in Greek his name is Apollyon." So that's the first woe judgment, or the fifth trumpet judgment. First, let's look at the star from heaven. The word star, again, what does it mean? Austere, a luminous body visible in the sky, besides the sun. That's the dictionary definition of a star. But it can be used of a literal star. Look at 1 Corinthians 15:41, for example. Says there is one glory of the sun and another glory of the moon and another glory of the stars. For star differs from star in glory. And he's talking about the night sky, the things that are visible in the night sky, the stars. Now, the word can be also be used figuratively. Look at Jude verse 13. Let's start at verse 12. He's talking about false teachers here. In verse 12, he describes them, "These are the men who are hidden reefs in your love feasts, when they feast with you without fear, caring for themselves. Clouds without water, carried along by winds, autumn trees without fruit, doubly dead, uprooted, wild waves of the sea, casting up their own shame like foam, wandering stars for whom the black darkness has been reserved forever." So you see, stars there is used metaphorically as a false teacher. It's also used in Revelation chapter 1 and verse 20 for the messengers of the seven churches. Remember, in verse 20 it says, "As for the mystery of the seven stars which you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands, the stars are the angels of the seven churches." So they're the pastors of the seven churches that these letters were to be written to. So they can, star can mean a literal heavenly body, or it can mean figuratively a person. Now here in Revelation, back in chapter 9, in verse 1, I saw a star from heaven which had fallen to the earth. Now the star, the word star here is used exactly like we would use it in English if we were to say a movie star. It's something that's very visible. Everybody knows it. Or a baseball star, a football star. We use that exact same figure of speech, and that's how it's used here. It's talking about a star. In other words, it's a well-known individual. So this star from heaven, which had fallen to the earth, is a well-known individual. It has to be a person. Why? Because it says the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. So it has to be a person, right? You don't give a key to a luminous object. It's a person. So it's a person who is very well known. Now the star has fallen in the past. And I say that because the words had fallen, the star from heaven which had fallen to the earth, the had fallen translates a perfect tense participle. And a perfect tense points to an action that took place in the past. And the results are still there. So he had been fallen in the past, and he's still fallen. And he was in heaven before falling. The word from, where it says he fell, I saw a star from heaven. The word from is the Greek word ek. Ek means out of as a source. His source was heaven. Now the details for this fall, if you want to look at them, are in Revelation 12, 7 through 9. I take it that the star is Satan, and there's those who don't. So this is my interpretation. We have to notice, first, the star is an intelligent agent. He's given a key. He takes the key, and he uses the key. In the last part of verse 1, it says, and the key of the bottomless pit was given to him. So it was given, he took it, and he opened the bottomless pit with it. So he's an intelligent agent. Now, key represents authority in the Bible. And we use the same thing. We give a person what? A key to the city. And that means he's a big shot. He has authority. So the star has a special relationship to those residing in the bottomless pit. And they're the demons we were looking at, or the fallen wicked angels before. His authority is given down in verse 11 of chapter 9 when it's talking about the things coming out of the pit. Verse 11 says, they have as a king over them the angel of the abyss. And his name in Hebrew is Abaddon. And in Greek, he has the name Apollyon. Those two words both mean the same thing. They mean destroyer. So his authority is over these guys from the bottomless pit. Now this is the first mention of the pit in Revelation, in verse 1. And it's going to be mentioned three times in chapter 9, and then four times in the rest of the book. So it's kind of a central theme from now on. So let's look at that bottomless pit for a minute. In verse 2, it says, he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke went up out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. Now, what can we say about this bottomless pit? The word bottomless is the Greek word abusos. We get an English word almost directly from that. What is it? Abyss. The word abyss. It's from the abyss. Look at Luke chapter 8. And we can see in Luke chapter 8 that this abyss is known to be a prison for demons. Luke 8:26. Then they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. And when he came out onto the land, he was met by a man from the city who was possessed with demons and who had not put on any clothing for a long time and was not living in a house but in the tombs. See, they had streakers way back then. Seeing Jesus, he cried out and fell before him and said in a loud voice, "What business do you have? What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For it had seized him many times, and he was bound with chains and shackles and kept under guard, and yet he would break his bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. And they were imploring him not to command them to go away into the abyss. So in other words, these angels, or these demons who had possessed this guy, were begging Jesus not to send them to prison. "Don't put me in the abyss." Remember, there's two kinds of fallen angels. Fallen angels are free. There are free fallen angels, and they're what we call the demonic world right now. And before the cross, they indwelt many people. And sometimes you hear about people being indwelt today. And I'll say one thing for sure. A believer cannot be indwelt. Why is that? Because he who is in you is more powerful than he who is in the world. A believer cannot be indwelt by a demon. But I think that we see a different relationship between demons and people since the cross. Look at Colossians chapter 2. You know, when people read the Gospels and they don't put it together with the epistles, and they get kind of the idea that things are the same now as they were then. But remember, that was a different dispensation when the Gospels were written. That was the Old Testament, so to speak. The church didn't begin until Acts chapter 2. So we're living in a different relationship with God. And, I think, a different relationship with demons. Because in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 13, it says, "When you were dead in your transgressions and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he made you alive together with him, having forgiven us all our transgressions, having canceled out the certificate of debt consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. When he had disarmed the rulers and authorities, he made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through him." So Jesus triumphed over these powers and authorities. And I would take it that that means then that they're in a different relationship to us than they were before the cross. So when I hear stories about demon possession and people go to the Gospels to say, "Well, see, people can be demon possessed," well, I'm kind of a skeptic, I have to say, because Colossians tells us that there's a different relationship now between the demonic world and believers, especially. Let's go back to Revelation, and we'll summarize the angel situation. There's the angels. Take that circle as being all of the angels. There are two different types. First, there's God's angels. Look at Luke 15. Luke 15:10. Verse 10 says, "In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." So God has angels. We all knew that anyway, right? But then there's another type of angel, and that's Satan's angels. These are the fallen angels. He's got angels too. Matthew 25, 41. Says, then he will also say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. So the devil has angels too. Now they're the fallen angels. But the devil's angels, Satan's angels, also divide down into two parts. We have the bound angels. We looked at that in 2 Peter 2:4 and Jude 6. Look at Revelation 9 and verse 14. Talking about the sixth trumpet. And in verse 14 it says, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. And then we had all those that we saw were bound in the bottomless pit. So there's bound angels of Satan's and free angels of Satan. We call those demons. You get the idea here? So that God has angels, Satan has angels. Satan's angels are either bound in the bottomless pit or by the river Euphrates or wherever else God chose to bind them, and he has free angels, which we call the demons or the fallen angel spirit world. So that's how angels break down. Now, the bottomless pit here is the prison for these fallen angels. And remember when we looked at 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, and we looked at Jude verse 6 about the angels who had abandoned their first position, and they came to earth and intermarried with humans. Look back at Genesis. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Genesis chapter 3. And this was Satan's attempt to make Genesis 3:15 impossible. In Genesis chapter 3, God made a prediction. In verse 15, he said, I will put enmity just means hostility, between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. So that's talking about Jesus Christ, isn't it? The seed of the woman. So what he's saying here is that there will be a human who will triumph over Satan. So what can Satan do to prevent this? Well, we looked at that, and what he did was had these angels intermarry with humans. And what would that do? Well, that would pollute the human race. Wouldn't be humans anymore. They'd be a hybrid race. And what did God do about that? He took those angels and threw them and bound them in the pit. So they're especially bad angels. They're really the bad guys of Satan's group. And they're bound in the pit, and they're going to be released during the tribulation. So we're really getting into the bad stuff here. Satan himself is going to be bound in this bottomless pit during the millennium. Look at Revelation 20. If you want to read about the angels intermarrying with humans, it's in Genesis chapter 6, just before the flood. Why did God have to destroy mankind with the flood? Because they were polluted. Mankind was polluted, except for the ones that followed him. Chapter 20, and verse 1 says, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he threw him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him so that he would not deceive the nations any longer until 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a short time. So during the millennial kingdom, there will be no satanic activity. You can't say Satan made me do it during the millennial kingdom because he is bound. So that's the bottomless pit. Now, the inhabitants of the pit are described in Revelation chapter 9, verses 3 through 11. And what can we tell about these guys? Verse 3 says, out of the smoke came locusts upon the earth. Locusts? Well, this can't refer to literal locusts. And I say that why? First of all, they're intelligent beings. They can exercise authority. Look at verse 3. Then out of the smoke came locusts upon the earth, and power was given to them. They can receive and execute commands. Verse 4. They were told not to hurt the grass of the earth, and so on. They can discern and distinguish. They're told not to hurt any man who has the seal of God on his forehead. So they can discern the seal of God, men, between the other men. So, and verse 11, they answer to a king. So they have a king over them, the angel of the abyss. So all of these things add up to the fact that these beings are intelligent. So they're not literal locusts. Verse 4, they were told not to hurt the grass, nor any green thing, nor any tree. What do locusts eat? Grass, green things, trees. So, I mean, these aren't your normal everyday locusts. They serve Satan's cause in the angelic realm. They're the ones who serve Satan's cause. Now they're going to be released. They're the fallen angels, the very wicked angels. Their power is limited in terms of extent and time. Look at verse 4, where it says, they were told not to hurt the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only the men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. So their power is limited in terms of extent. They can't hurt certain things and certain people. And their power is also limited in terms of time. In verse 5, they were not permitted to kill anyone but to torment for 5 months. So they're limited as to the time they have. Their effects, the torment that these guys can deliver is so severe that men will seek death rather than endure the torment. Now, this would be heaven for Dr. Kevorkian, because everybody wants to die rather than endure the effects of these satanic angels. Verse 6, and in those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will long to die, and death flees from them. So they won't even be able to die. Maybe it wouldn't be heaven for Dr. Kevorkian, because they won't be able to die. They'll just suffer. I mean, this is getting bad. We're getting bad here in the woe judgments. Their description makes it clear then they're not ordinary locusts. Why are they called locusts? They're a plague from the Lord. And that's biblical. That, what did he send on Egypt? A plague of locusts. So that is the interpretation of why he calls them locusts. So when he describes them here, he's describing their characteristics, not so much their physical appearance as their characteristics. And what can we see about the characteristics of these things? First, they are fully prepared and they're eager to go do Satan's work. Look at verse 7, where it says, the appearance of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. They're ready to go. So they're fully prepared. They're eager. They pretend to have regal authority. On their heads appeared to be crowns like gold. Appeared to be crowns like gold. So they were fake. They pretend, though, that they have this authority. They assume human dignity and intelligence. Intelligence would be the key factor here because their faces were like the faces of men. And when the Bible talks about faces, it's usually referring to intelligence. Their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like the hair of women. Now, long hair is a symbol of submissiveness. So these guys are direct agents of Satan because that long hair is just a symbol of submission. Now remember back in the 60s and the early 70s, and everybody had long hair and people were saying, oh wow, you know, these guys are what the Revelation was talking about. Well, this is a picture of a random hippie that I just happen to have. And you'll notice he has hair like a woman. But he wasn't a direct agent of Satan, I don't think. Let's get past that. I couldn't help it, I'm sorry. They are savage and cruel. Their teeth were like the teeth of lions, last part of verse 8. They are indestructible. Their breastplates were like the breastplates of iron, in the first part of verse 9. They have energy and speed. In fact, they have abounding energy and speed. It says the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots, of many horses rushing into battle. And they can inflict the most intense pain. They have tails like scorpions and stings, and their tails is their power to hurt men for 5 months, verse 10. So unlike any locust, they don't hurt vegetation, but they hurt men. So they're not literal locusts. They are Satan's fallen angels. Now, the scorpion sting, it's hardly ever fatal, but it's said to be one of the most painful. Some of them are fatal. I was looking about scorpions in the encyclopedia when I got to this, and there are two kinds of scorpions that can actually be fatal to an adult human, and I think they're found in southern Africa, and they're big. Scorpions can get up to 6 inches long, but they're very, very painful in their sting. Any of you guys ever watched the bug guy on National Geographic Channel? He drives a Harley and wears a do-rag, and he's an entomologist, and he studies bugs. What he does is sometimes he puts things on his arm to get them to bite him, to see what it feels like. He did it with a wasp one time, and when he did it with a scorpion, he flung his arm and broke the bottle, and the scorpion got away. But the idea was, that hurt. That hurt bad. He's kind of a nut. But that's just the idea, that a scorpion sting is a very, very painful sting. So this is talking about very, very intense suffering. And they have a king. In verse 11, they have a king over them, the angel of the abyss. His Hebrew name Abaddon and his Greek name Apollyon both mean destroyer. That's the Hebrew word and the Greek word for destroyer. So Satan and his angels here are seen as the destroyers of men's souls. In our day, in the church age, Satan is often seen as an angel of light. He's the one who is behind religion in the bad sense. He is behind the false religion. But when the restraint is removed, his true character comes out. And he is the king of these guys who torment men. Now, just a note, some expositors take this to be Satan's right-hand man instead of Satan himself, because it says he is the angel of the abyss. And they take that to mean that he's in the abyss with these angels. But it doesn't actually say that. It says he's the angel of the abyss, over the abyss. So I take it to be Satan. Again, that really doesn't matter. But what does matter is that these woe judgments are really getting bad now. We have 5 months of absolute torment from Satan's really bad guy angels. Now next week we'll look at the sixth trumpet and the second woe. Father, thank you again for this future history you've given us. Thank you for sparing us from the terrible torments that will be endured during the tribulation period. Father, we thank you in Christ's name. Amen.